Necessity by Madeline Etheridge. Part 1. They had better get paid well. Alan scratched his back against the tree he leaned against, waiting. He always felt antsy before a job. Rightfully so, he supposed. All of his previous jobs were dangerous. But this one paid well, at least. Far better than anything else he had done before. If he were in a more bitter mood, he might think he was lucky to be getting paid at all. At least he wasn't a court magician anymore. Possible death by angry ghost was probably better. At least it paid. Alan Lakeman waited across the street from a decrepit building. Part of the roof had fallen in some number of years ago. The windows were boarded up, the planks blackened from years of rot, rainfall, and snowmelt. And dark ivy vines threatened to pull the sidings from the walls. A thin brackish mist clung to the ground in this remote part of the city. Thankfully remote. The light blue rings around Alan's dark eyes stood out too much in the Shadowland mist. If an exempt caught him in the dark, they might think he was a spectral daemon himself. A feature he had admittedly used to his advantage before. But he was too agitated now to want the trouble. Where were they? How long were they intending to keep him waiting? His answer, mercifully, came with a parting of the mist. Alan's partner appeared a short ways down the road, their eyes locked on the house. They walked quietly and smoothly, the light wind catching their robes, almost seeming to float. Now there's a ghost, Alan thought. Oi, he said aloud with a short nod. You are already here, Alan's partner said, without turning their head to face him. Did you learn anything about the building?
Yeah, it's a pile of junk.
Lee turned, not glaring at Alan's quip, just impassively staring, as they always did. Our client is renovating it, they said. It won't be junk forever. It was someone's home once, and can be again.
Renovating, huh?
So I guess that means... No fire, said Lee. Not this time.
Alan grunted. It would have been the easiest way to deal with this. Burn the building down and let the land's new owner build something new. Something without a daemon.
What did you find out? Lee asked. The magician pointed to the sunken spot on the roof. Roof collapsed. The house had been abandoned for saints know how long. We'll need to be careful to avoid bringing the whole building down on us. His finger moved to a cellar door on the right side of the building. Looks like it's got a basement as well. Did the client turn over any floor plans?
Lee shook their head.
No, this house isn't on any Fersian records.
Course not.
Lee moved toward the house, and Alan followed. I scoped out the back while I was waiting, Alan said conversationally. All the doors, back and front, are locked, but the boards on the windows looked weak in spots. I think I could knock 'em open. Or if you want to try the second-story balcony. Those are never locked. I didn't realize you had experience breaking and entering, Lee commented.
Alan rubbed his nose. A bit. We didn't have to enter the last one, and the one before that wasn't locked. If not floor plans, what were you getting from the new owner?
Lee shrugged. Information. I hoped to learn something of the previous owner, but Mr. Blair wasn't able to find anything.
I see.
Alan stepped onto the porch and tapped on the front window's boards. The wood was spongy.
The neighbors know we're doing this, right? I'd rather not have the city watch coming down on us.
The nearest neighbor's house was a full kilometer away, down a winding, tree-lined road, far out of sight and earshot. Leonie stared, and Alan rolled his eyes.
Just trying to lighten the mood. You'll want to get off the porch. Give me a command and I'll punch open these windows.
Instead of a command, Alan heard a click. Lee opened the door with one hand, a small brass key in the other.
Where did you...
Lee smiled faintly. Mr. Blair had a key. They entered the building, leaving Alan on the porch to massage his temples.
Saint Aaron help me, he thought.
He wondered if that was the trick to St. Aaron's followers. They practiced patience, and forced everyone around them to practice it as well. At least the Shrine of St. Aaron paid well.
Alan followed his partner into the house and regretted not taking a deep breath outside first. The deep smell of must and mold assailed his nose, and his eyes itched at the dust. Particles swirled in the dark air, caught in the dim light filtering through the door and window cracks. It must have been a nice home once. It was 2 stories tall, with an attic and basement, and a porch and balcony ringing a circular tower. Its gardens, once well kept, were overgrown now and teeming with life. Life moved on and thrived outside. Inside, it just stopped. The room to the right of the entrance was a kitchen. A teapot sat on the stove with a spiderweb draped over the handle and spout. Unidentifiable lumps that may have been edible once rested on the shelves. Alan expected a rotting smell, but the kitchen had been left alone so long it was past the stage of rotten decay and waited in a sort of dusty stasis. To the left was a sitting room, filled, appropriately, with chairs and lounges. Crocheted shawls covered every chair, shelves filled with books and small knick-knacks framed in ashy fireplace. A couple books rested on the table with a half-burned candle and a crochet hook. If not for the dust, it looked like the previous occupant could walk into the room at any moment to resume their life. But whoever the previous occupant was, they were long gone now. Alan and Lee were the first to disturb the home in years. Lee ran their eyes along the ground, and Alan recognized that searching look. "Please tell me you're not considering taking your shoes off," he said.
"No," Lee replied. "I don't think the owner minded shoes. There's no place to put them."
"You're going to step on a nail one of these days."
"I'm not sure if shoes would help in that scenario."
Lee brushed their fingers on a bureau, leaving a trail in the dust.
"Do you think it would help to clean?"
"It'd help my allergies," Alan grumbled. "Come on, let's get this over with."
Lee nodded and moved into the sitting room. They patted one of the chairs, sending up a cloud that sent them into a coughing fit. Still coughing, they sat down, pulled a roll of cloth from within their cloak, and unrolled it on the table. The largest item wrapped in the cloth was a small ceramic bowl. Lee turned it right side up in the center of the cloth, and reached for the scissors also contained within the roll.
"I thought you said no fire," Alan said.
Lee held out the scissors. "Only a little. We need our friend informed."
The magician shuffled over and took the scissors. He handed them back a moment later with a short tuft of dark brown hair. Lee set the hair in the bowl and snipped off a short lock of their own. Lee's black hair went into the bowl with Alan's, along with a wick and a ball of spermaceti wax. Lee pressed and rolled the contents together until it formed an ugly little candle.
"If we keep doing these, I'm going to run out of hair," Alan complained. His hair was already short, and a graying spot next to his left temple shorter than the rest.
Lee's was shoulder length, but shaggy and uneven from several cuttings taken over the years.
"You could grow your hair out," Lee suggested, flint and steel in hand.
They chipped sparks onto the candle and sheltered the tiny new flame until it caught onto the wick and hairs.
"Hello, friend. Do you know us?"
"Lee Myers. Alan Lakeman."
The flame's small voice crackled in their minds. The fire daemon consumed their hair, and it would take memories from what it burned. As long as there was hair to eat, the fire would know them and their mission.
Lee smiled.
"Good." They stood and inspected the rest of the room.
"We should begin searching. Would you like to split up?"
"If it gets us out of here sooner," Alan said. He wasn't looking forward to going through this old house alone, but he could appreciate efficiency. "I'll take the upstairs?"
"Yes. I'll find the basement, and then we can split this floor."
"Be careful down there. There could be rats."
"Don't let them bite you."
"I know. They won't bite me."
"Yell if you find anything?"
Lee gave Alan a look, and Alan shied away. He knew he could be overbearing, but Lee was so small and young. Worry came instinctually to Alan, even if he knew Lee was just as capable as he was.
"Well, in ways."
Lee couldn't use magic. Not like Alan could, but they had their talents. The magician moved to the stairs and climbed to the second floor, cringing at each creaky step. The second floor was in a similar state to the first. Dusty and musty. Little more than a narrow hallway branching off into several bedrooms. Alan peeked into each room, deciding which he wanted to turn over first.
They were looking for a body.
One would think such a thing would be easy to find. He expected to find it waiting for them in one of the beds. If not that, then perhaps a sign of some struggle hinting to the location of the corpse. He caught himself wondering how his life got to this point, for him to be exploring abandoned houses for abandoned bodies with a nobleman. At least it paid. That was his mantra. Alan stepped into the bedroom farthest from the stairs. It looked to be the master bedroom. The large bed still stood in the center against the wall. It was neatly made, the corners of its thick quilts tucked under the wool mattress. Alan ran his hand over the blanket and pulled back in disgust. He hated that filmy texture of old fabric. He rubbed his hands on his pants, grimacing, and looked around the rest of the room. It was just the bed. A small dressing room, a dresser, and more bookshelves. Whoever lived here must have loved reading. He stuck his head into the dressing room and startled himself. There was a copper mirror at the far end, and the glint of blue light from his eyes looked strange against the dark reflection. Almost purple.
"Spooky frickin' house," he growled.
He almost heard Lee chastising him for that. The noble would urge, but not command, him to be more polite. But Lee was in the basement, and Alan was alone up here. Giving up, Alan moved toward the room entrance. Some movement caught his eye. In pure street-honed instinct, he jumped to the right onto the bed. Boom! The bookshelf nearest Alan fell to the ground where he had been standing. Alan stared, wide-eyed, as the dust in the room settled once more. The heavy bookshelf now laid face down, flat against the floor. If he hadn't been so quick to dodge, well, he didn't think it would have killed him, but it would have hurt. He cursed under his breath. He had warned Lee about the poor structural integrity of the building, and here he was, bringing it down around himself. Except this room wasn't under the collapsed part of the roof. The floor didn't look to be uneven. He eased himself off the bed and put some weight on the floorboards. Sturdy. He doubted his weight on the floor was enough to shift something as heavy as the bookshelf. He had a hunch, and he didn't like it. The magician knelt by the bookshelf and rested a hand on its wood. He closed his eyes, took a deep breath, focused. If you find it necessary, use magic to investigate the nature of the enchantments you encounter at the buildings we are sent to investigate. It was a restrictive command, given at the start of his partnership with Lee. But it was enough. Alan's blue aura spread from his fingertips into the wood. "Knock, knock," he muttered. His mind probed the space within. It was like sticking his head into a hole on a frozen lake and looking under the ice sheet. Except underwater was somewhere else. Some place where space didn't work right. He couldn't wrap his head around it, and apparently no one else could either. Something-something Damon Plane magic, something or other. His eyes glazed over any time his old mentor talked about it. Whatever this space was, it was empty. He pulled his aura back. There were traces in there as if it had been enchanted recently. He had expected that, and he didn't like it. He heard a scream. "Lee!" Alan vaulted over the bookshelf and bolted out the door. He dove down the stairs and grabbed the banister at the bottom to spin himself toward the back of the house and kept running. Halfway down the hall, it occurred to him that he didn't know where the basement was. But luckily, he found the open door in the back room. It opened like a maw into darkness. He grabbed the rails to run down. "Stop immediately!" He gasped as the obligation grabbed him and held him back at the top of the stairs. "Lee!" he yelled into the dark. I'm fine. I fell." There was a rustling noise in the basement. "The stairs are... ow. Uneven." Alan released his breath and sunk to the ground. After his own run-in with the bookshelf, he had expected the worst. "You weren't pushed or anything, were you?"
"No." Lee's voice was disembodied in the abyss at the bottom of the stairs.
Can you bring the flame? It's dark.
The bonds of obligation holding Alan at the top of the stairs faded, but Lee's request came with the implication of a command, just enough for Alan to feel it pulling him back to the sitting room.
Lee, I can literally glow, he said, lighting his hands with his aura. Let me come down there.
Lee was quiet for longer than Alan was comfortable with, and then their level voice returned with a full command.
Bring the fire, Alan, and the bag and bell. I think I found her.
The magician swallowed.
Okay, hold on.
He stood and left for the sitting room to retrieve their things and returned a moment later. Gingerly, he started down the stairs. Sure enough, one of the steps was a little taller than the rest, just enough to send an unsuspecting nobleman careening downward. The noblemen sat at the bottom, their knees tucked under their chin. The side of their cloak was scuffed, but they seemed fine on the surface. Alan wondered how bruised they would be under that thick cloak after falling so far. He handed the tiny candle and bag to them, and relit his hands with his own faint light. The basement was a simple root cellar, with walls of mud and brick. One wall was lined with shelves of boxes, bottles of wines, and glass jars of unidentifiable contents. Several other boxes and barrels littered the floor. Alan's blue light reflected off of a rat's beady eyes before it scurried back into its hiding place. On the ground in front of Lee was a pile of bones draped in thin, decaying rags. Alan moved closer. The rags were probably clothes once, disintegrated with the body's decay. Upon closer inspection, the bones were arranged as a complete skeleton. A person, laid out on the floor, face down, in front of the stairs. He carefully lifted some of the cloth to see it better, and sucked his teeth when he saw the fracture near the top of the skeleton's left thigh bone. There would be no hope of climbing the stairs alone with that sort of injury.
"You said you found her," he said.
Lee set the candle on the ground and untied the bag into a large flat cloth. If you wait a moment, you can feel her presence. It's strongest down here. Alan really didn't want to. He shuffled uncomfortably and took a seat on the bottom step while Lee worked. The priest quietly stacked bones on the cloth.
It must have been so sad, Lee said. Being alone in her last moments. The house was large enough for a full family. Alan wondered if this really was the only body here, but it must be. He could hear Lee's scream from the second floor. If anyone else was here when this person fell, they would have surely heard her and come to help. His mind drifted back to the sitting room, and he realized the woman may have been quite old at the time of her death. The shawls and crochet needles reminded him of his own grandmother. Perhaps the rest of her family had already moved on, or had been planted in the gardens outside.
"Do you think we should plant her pyre flower in the garden?" Alan asked. Lee looked up at him with a confounded stare.
"Of course. I would have thought that was obvious."
Alan rolled his eyes. "I'm new to this."
"Not so new," Lee replied, returning to their work. "I think the ivy is her spouse's pyre flower. You saw the way it pried at the house."
"It was trying to get in," Alan muttered.
Lee nodded. "Well, that is where we come in. Are you ready?"
"We're doing this here?"
"We shouldn't remove the body if we can help it," Lee said. "I think you can manage."
Alan thought Lee was putting an awful lot of trust in his abilities. Fire was never his forte, but it was the best way to destroy a body. It was not destroying everything around the body, including himself, that was the difficult part. Growing up in Duskbridge, Alan hadn't put much thought into pyre flowers. He knew of plant daemons, and he'd spent time in a communal pyre garden listening to their voices. They seemed so far removed from humans. Daemons didn't have the same compulsions and needs as people. As long as the plants had good soil, water, and sunlight, they were content. And they seemed almost agitated by the company of humans. Or maybe just his company. They spoke in alien, whispering voices in his head, passive-aggressively asking why he was bothering them,
or asking him to join them eternally as a flower instead of a living human. And yet, deep down, there was something human there, mingling in the mess of consciousness that comprised the daemon. At the core of his grandparents' quiet pyreflowers, there was some familiar warmth. It reminded him of comfortable days waiting in their kitchen for snacks or playing with toys on their floor. He thought he understood the need for pyreflowers then, for the living memorials to the deceased. Then he met Lee. Then he learned what happens to a dead body left alone to rot. Lee moved deeper into the root cellar and knelt on the ground as far away as they could from the pile of bones and unfurled bag. They left the candle near the bones, but took the bell, which they gently set on the ground in front of them. Alan carefully sidled around and took a seat on the box behind the priest. Whoever this woman was, she died alone. Her body was left in the cellar, and the decaying process started as soon as her breathing stopped. Had she been found sooner, or if she had died in the care of relatives, she would have been given a funeral pyre, just like her spouse who had gone before. The remaining ashes from the pyre would be mixed with her chosen seeds to be planted in the garden. A new pyre flower would grow in that place, and from her ashes and seeds would come new life. Her life, anew, reborn. The soul didn't die with the body. Ideally, it would transfer into something new and live again. But sometimes that didn't happen. Sometimes the soul couldn't escape the body. Not entirely. Sometimes it stayed while the body withered and decayed and rotted and liquefied. Dust and fluids settled into the ground below and spread. Sometimes the body did let the soul go eventually, but then the soul found a new body. The next closest container it could find. A body made of wood, and bricks, and stone, and tile, and cloth. Lee bowed their head briefly, then took the bell. They rang it once, and the bell took on a faint blue glow. Alan shuddered as Lee rang the bell twice more. The bell was enchanted, roughly, but it got the job done. It had the purpose of drawing wrought daemons toward its sound. After a moment, the air in the cellar cooled. The floorboards above them groaned and creaked as some energy shifted within them, coming closer. Lee closed their eyes and bowed their head again, deeper, concentrating. The magician shifted nervously on the box. He had seen this once before. The first time he had accompanied Lee on one of these missions. In a fit of curiosity, he joined Lee in meditating that first time. And he didn't want to do it again. This was Lee's domain, making sure the spirit was present in its entirety, communing with it. According to the priest, almost all of them came easily, ready to move to their next life. Alan imagined this one would be no different. He wouldn't want to spend eternity in this house, either. Alan, Lee said. Their voice was flat and distant, lost in communion with the house's daemon. Yes? Alan was suddenly alert. Lee hadn't spoken last time. Was something wrong? Did you insult her house while you were upstairs? Alan coughed. Sorry. Lee looked over their shoulder at the magician, their gray eyes tired. Please, Alan, you know to be respectful. We're guests, they said crisply. It's your turn. The magician stood and took his place closer to the pile of bones. He shivered at the colder air surrounding them and braced himself, eyes locked on the tiny candle flame, his hands raised. Lee gave the command. By fire, release the soul from its binding so that it may join the cycle anew. With a deep breath, Alan's hands lit a bold blue. The candle flame flickered into the same blue and erupted into a coil of azure heat. Alan took a half step back and made a sweeping motion with his arms. The fire followed his motion and plunged into the skeletal remains. With another motion, he focused the fire around the bones, leaving the cloth beneath and the wood framing the cellar untouched. He hoped. Still holding his glowing hands toward the white-blue flame, he backed up behind Lee and sat down again. Now it was just a matter of waiting for the last organic vestiges to turn to ash in the intense heat. Firelight flickered on Lee's face, revealing a melancholy Alan wasn't accustomed to seeing. After a moment, Lee spoke.
"Alan, do you have a family?"
Alan blinked rapidly in surprise at the sudden question, and he stumbled over half answers.
"Yes, no, well..."
"What about you?" he stammered, trying to turn the question around. The nobleman's expression fell further.
"No, I'm, you know, a spare."
Alan kicked himself inwardly at his insensitivity. The priest was a nobleman, but that didn't mean they were someone's heir. All it meant was they could command magicians, like Alan, and that ability made it risky to keep more than one nobleman child around. If they weren't the heir, they were the spare. It was possible Lee didn't even know their nobleman parent, considering they had joined the shrine of St. Aaron at such a young age.
"Sorry," Alan said.
Lee shrugged, and their countenance returned to normal. "I just wondered what it must have been like to have grandparents. She seemed nice."
"Do you think she had kids? Grandkids?"
Lee made a small noise of confirmation.
"Not very nice of them to leave their grandma like this."
"You're right." After some time, the fire died down. The bones had combusted down to ashes and small shards of calcium. With a flourish, Alan directed the last of the flame back into the candle and dropped the glow from his hands. With nothing but candlelight and daylight filtering down from the first floor to light the cellar, the priest moved over to the pile and started tying up the bag with the remains folded within. Alan eyed the bottles on the shelves. With the daemon exorcised, the new owner would come to claim the house and all of its contents within a few days. Mr. Blair probably wouldn't notice if a bottle of cellar wine went missing. As Alan twisted a bottle to view its label, the candle went out.
"Alan?"
Alan pulled away from the bottle.
"Wasn't me. Probably a bad wick."
He stood and stepped toward Lee. The cellar door slammed shut.